This program has been brought to you by Roberta's Pizza, robertaspizza.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stein from the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour, half hour. We're here tonight at Roberta's, and I don't know if the listeners probably don't know, but the studio is right in front of a table, a two-top, and I always judge how the show is going to go by how the date is going, or the dinner is going in front of us, and I have to say, tonight, there's a couple here. The guy has hand tattoos, and the woman is wearing a jersey knit sweater, and they look like they're having a wonderful time, and it makes me really happy. Today's show is about criticism. It's called Critic on Critic on Critic, and in the first half, and in the second half, we have something I've always wanted to do, which is a wild musical turkey hunt, and you will know what that means once you hear it. But as we often do, we're going to start the show with a segment I like to call Food Poem in an English Accent.
Food Poem in an English Accent.
Moira, are you there?
I'm here.
So everyone, this is Moira Hodgson, the longtime restaurant critic for the New York Observer, a Belletto Maine, I think that's the term, and a holder of a lovely English accent. Moira, where is your accent from?
Well, I guess it's from Dorset, southwest of England.
And how
Thomas Hardy country.
Thomas Hardy country. Yes. How do you characterize that accent?
I don't know. It's just English, I suppose. It's not a regional accent of any kind. It's just a kind of generic English accent.
I think we've had this segment maybe five or six times, and this is one of the more dulcet-toned accents that we've had. So it's lovely to hear your voice. And you'll be reading a poem for us today by a gentleman named Carl Elder out of Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Yes.
And it is called Onion. Would you read it for us?
I shall. Onion. Adam's apple of Lucifer. So long as you've remained your own translucent Tupperware, I hate halving your transcendental self. And I'm off-center, having invaded your brilliant boundary against my wishes, against the grain. Yet, onion, any way I slice you on the cutting board, rendering a map of your world, concurrent lines, topographical in spots I fumbled with a dull paring knife, I cannot now nor ever put you together again, though you fall in piles of perfect ivory rings, treasure of Proserpine. Poem in many parts, favorite of mine. My stewing gives you cause for sleeplessness, your life extending long after your death. You haunt. My teeth reek of your anguish, my words your flesh. For I have known the onion already, known all the onions. Onion, I weep for your radiant pain.
Moira. Thank you. That was beautifully read.
Thank you.
Thank you for being a guest, and I will talk to you soon.
Great. Thank you, Josh. Bye.
Food poem in an English accent.
Now, my next guest is also a critic, a restaurant critic. His name is Adam Platt, and he's a restaurant critic at New York Magazine. Adam, are you there?
I'm here, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, I am so excited that you agreed to be on.
No problem.
I guess I wanted to chat with another critic. I don't know how it is for you, but I don't feel that I have that much of an opportunity just to talk to other restaurant critics about, you know, how they see what they do and some of the challenges and some of the, you know, obviously there's a lot of plus sides to it. I've been struggling a little bit, I guess, with the I feel like it's a hamster wheel of newness. My last review was for a restaurant that's been around for a long time.
Yep.
And hasn't really been written about that much. And
yep.
For our listeners, it's called La Mangeoire. And it's a French bistro in Midtown East. And the chef there is Christian Deloufrier. But there's no real reason to write about it. And I think it depends on how you think the role of a critic, what you think the role of a critic is. Is it to say new places or discover old places? And I'm curious how you tackle that issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it depends what your whatever publication you have any working for is after.
Mm-hmm.
And with the one that I happen to work for, which is New York, they tend to be, there have been different editors I've worked for, but since the beginning of my time there, which is perhaps at this point a little too long, they want the new thing. You know, the hamster wheel of newness is what that magazine is all about. And so they have their writers, not just their restaurant critics, it's everybody, and they have them just running on that hamster wheel.
Yeah.
Now, part of it is New York is bread and butter is service, and service journalism is where to go right now that's hot and new. And so that's pretty much what I have been hooked into, I agree with you, and I saw your review on Deloulier's place, and I that's the kind of place that I thought of going to 5 years ago and then said no. And I'm sure it's fabulous, and now I feel bad, and I'm going to go up there.
It's still open.
It's still open, and it's fabulous. But it's the kind of place that if I either reviewed it, gave it a flat-out review to, or what usually happens if I don't review a place, I mean, as you know, there are all these new restaurants. They come at you like, you know, a sort of a stampede of hamsters. There's thousands of them.
Yeah.
And so you have to pick them out. And a lot of it,
and well packaged hamsters, you know, like
they're just they come at you.
Yeah,
they come at you, and there's a tendency if somebody else reviews something and you haven't reviewed it, they'll go, well, shouldn't we? You know, there's a tendency. I mean, I don't get a lot of that, but there is a, you know, you sort of want to try and sort of be focused on what's the next thing. What's the
right?
Next
well,
thing.
Like what's Platt's take, or
what's Platt's take, or I don't know. I mean, you know, I mean, it's sort of different now because it's different for me personally. When I started doing this column, I would write often every week. But now my schedule, although it's still pegged to the magazine itself, the sort of New York actual functional, the actual paper magazine, I also write for the Internet. But that paper magazine now comes out every other week. So.
Right. Which is either biweekly.
It's biweekly. So it means the chances of me doing a place like what you're, not obscure, but a 5, 6, 7, 8-year-old bistro on the upper West Side or Upper East Side, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm really, the hamster wheel of newness for me is small and tight, and I scamper on it in a desperate way.
Yeah, and I think the thing that is so, I feel frustrated by it. And I feel frustrated because I do think that there are these guys like Chef Deloufrier, who...
Yeah, great chef, just not fashionable now.
Not fashionable.
In his day, one of the great grand chefs of the world. I mean, you and I know that the whole great trend is... I mean, Deloufrier was running a grand hotel restaurant when I started in this racket.
L'Espinasse?
Yes,
yeah.
And now those, you know, as tastes have changed and that their whole gourmet sort of palace world that those guys grew up in crumbled to the ground, they've sort of been sort of reduced to cooking their old-fashioned comfort food in sort of out of the way places like him. I mean, it's in many ways it's a fascinating story. I mean, it's like it's the food story of the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think the thing what so impressed me about him in particular, and I know there's a lot of backstory about what he is this his ideal outcome? No, it's probably not his ideal outcome to be here, but he was talking about how he does the same set of recipes and has done for a long time. He's been there for 5 years. And it's very simple, but it's important to be, I guess you could say, mindful and present each time you do it. So you're doing something thousands of times, and you're doing it the first time every time. And so I've also eaten at other places like Dirty French, and without, I still think what they're doing is very valid. I think that's a necessary part of restaurants moving the restaurant culture forward and all that stuff. But they're all about innovation and moving forward. And if they do something, they move on and they do something else. And what Delouvrier, I feel like, is saying, and it's a very old school, in a little bit, in a way, it has less ego in it, is I'm just going to do the same thing and be disciplined and spend my energy, you know, my self-control, being disciplined.
Well, he's doing what he knows. I mean, he's never, he's doing what he knows, and he's doing what he's comfortable with, and frankly, he's doing what sells for him right now.
Right.
You know, on a scale that works for him. Whereas Dirty French, I mean, you know, the Dirty French, those guys are the Delouvriers of their time, whether we like it or not. And they're also working in that comforting, you know, old-fashioned sort of, you know, that vocabulary, but they are doing it in this sort of flashy way. And, you know, I don't know how innovative it is, actually, compared to sort of what other chefs are doing.
Yeah.
But it certainly is popular.
It is popular. I guess I mean innovative, perhaps not in the in the strictly culinary sense, but in the, as they did with Carbone, which I think Carbone was probably their, it's like their Icarus moment, you know, but was reinventing to some extent the red sauce joint. And I feel like what they're trying to do with Dirty French is reinventing the bistro. And I think
before that, they reinvented the Italian deli.
Right.
And that's that is the sort of classic trend that younger chefs are doing.
I think, but what kind of bums me out a little bit about that is you feel like this is what we'll read about, right? The reinvention of the bistro, the reinvention of the Italian deli, the reinvention of the red sauce joint. And then there will be occasional elegiac pieces mourning the loss of the original red sauce joint, the original Italian deli, the original bistro. And I feel like that's a hamster wheel talking.
It's a hamster wheel talking. You're right. I'm in full agreement with you.
And it's hard to, as you mentioned up top, it's hard to, when you work for a publication like New York Magazine, at The Observer, I don't know if anyone reads, you know, including the management reads the column, so I'm not getting any pressure from that, but
you're a free man.
I'm a free man, but at the same time, it's like page views. That's what they want. They're after page views. They're after, as everyone is, I feel like, tweets and shares and all that stuff. And not only are you... I feel frustrated about the hamster wheel of newness, but I think a more insidious almost pressure I feel is I know that the slams I've done, like the real pans, just going after a place, they do so much better than like a well-reasoned review.
Of course, I know this better. I'm the king of the two-star review. I'm all about well-reasoned. And I have actually been told for a long time by friendly editors, you know, people read pans and they read just flat out, you know, fireworks, 10 stars, and the hazy land in the middle, which
the
is
nuance.
We all know the truth,
right?
Is something that people tend to ignore. And I've also been told, apparently, I don't know if you've gotten this, but apparently, you know, again, when I started doing this for New York, I mean, the restaurant review and food coverage, but really the restaurant reviews were sort of tent poles, and, you know, because it's a local city magazine, and New York is obviously, New Yorkers are nuts about food, and so it was read very religiously by people. And I'm now told that online, people don't really read reviews anymore. I mean, there's too much competition. And also, with the website that New York has, I mean, they pitched it to a sort of a national audience.
Right.
So food in that great sort of buzzing fashionista, you know, recap of Game of Thrones, you know, they're not going to, you know, a little review about a fried chicken joint is not going to get a lot of attention. Although, frankly, if you want to review something that gets some attention, review a fried chicken joint.
Right. I wrote that. I wrote about birds and bubbles, which I think
we both reviewed it. You didn't like it so much, and I liked it better.
Yeah, I think you gave it what, 2 stars.
I always give everything 2 stars. Although I did it with another place, another Friday chickeny, you know, Nouveau Southern, whatever. And I gave that place no stars.
So
that caused a little sort of ruffling of feathers.
Ah, literally. I like that. I like that play into it. Yeah. Well, Adam, thank you so much for joining me for these minutes. I look forward to bitching about the hamster wheel off
air. My pleasure. And this is the thing. Critics, as you know, it's like we don't, especially with restaurant critics who are supposed to be, you know, quiet and not talking to each other and disguised. We never talk to each other.
Well, I like talking to you. Neither one of us are in disguise, so let's go.
Well, we'll go get a burger sometime.
Yeah, or fried chicken. Okay.
All right.
That was Adam Platt from New York.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. That was Adam Platt from New York Magazine, and we'll be right back after the break.
You are listening to Rabies by Huntronic.
Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
Hi, this is Joshua David Stunt. I have to say that was my favorite 15 minutes of the show that I've done. We're nailing it this episode. Liz, the engineer, also thinks we're nailing it. So for the second half, instead of having a musical guest, which is our tradition around here, we're going to do something that I've always wanted to do. I studied ethnomusicology at New York University, which is a completely pointless institution and major, except for right now. So now what we're going to do is a wild musical turkey hunt, and I'm going to play 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 songs. The first one starts with the turkey, and we're going to go on a crazy journey, and we're going to end with food. Now the first song, and these are all, by the way, Folkways Smithsonian records from between the 50s and the latest one is the 80s. The first one we're going to play is called Shoe Turkey, and it's by the Moving Star Hall Singers from John's Island, which is off the coast of South Carolina. This was recorded in, I think, 62, and the Moving Star Hill Singers are part of the Gullah tradition, which is a very unique sort of African-American tradition off the coast, right in those islands. So here is Shoe Turkey.
Honey,
yes.
You spun to the wedding.
Yes, ma.
Did you get any kids?
Yes, ma.
How nice it tastes.
Nice, nice.
Did you burn to the wedding?
Yes, ma.
Did you get any wine?
Yes, ma.
How nice to drink.
Nice, nice.
Honey,
ma.
Do you see my turkey?
Yes, ma.
Where's Sidey going?
So, so.
Will you help me catch him?
Yes, ma'am.
Get ready, let's go. Shoot turkey, shoot. Honey,
Mom.
Did you find that turkey?
Yes, Mom.
Let's eat them today.
Yes, Mom.
How did it taste?
Nice.
Honey,
Mom.
Let's we go hunting?
Yes, Mom.
Where did you find? They don't know the mother turning it. It's the Lord turning it. You say you go hunting, and what you're hunting for, just what you find. What did you find? A rabbit.
Name any animal.
What you find? Did you cook it? Yeah, how you clean it, how you skin it, and all like that you put in it.
So that was Shoe Turkey, and as you could hear there at the end, she was kind of translating some of the lyrics from Gullah into English. Now, this next song is so far out, and I can't believe this record exists. The song is called, well, everyone knows the song. It's called Froggy Went A-Courting. It's a traditional folk song, very traditional. But the subtitle is 300 Turkeys. Now, this is from an album by a guy named Jim Nolman, which was recorded in the 80s. And I think the subtitle is Jim Nolman in the company of 300 turkeys, 20 orcas, and a pack of wolves. Jim Nolman's whole deal is about interspecies collaboration. So he recorded these songs in the company of 300 turkeys, and he said that each turkey responds to a different level of intensity in the music. And he had been attacked from being too revved up in a song, so that's why I think he's a little bit cautious and hesitant while singing this, but you can hear the turkeys in the background. So this is the second part.
Frog went according, he did ride, uh-huh. Frog went according, he did ride, sword and pistol by his side, uh-huh, uh-huh. He did go to Missy Mouse's door, uh-huh. Uh-huh. He went to Missy Mouse's door, uh-huh. Uh-huh. He went to Missy Mouse's door where it'd been so many times before, uh-huh. Missy Mouse, are you within, uh-huh? Missy Mouse, are you within, uh-huh? Missy Mouse, are you within? Yes, kind sir, I sit and spin, uh-huh. Froggy got
that. I stopped that, but you kind of get the point. It's mostly just him singing with turkeys. Well, we're going to keep on the turkey theme, and this song is called Tren Gelir Hos Gelir, and that means the train calls, it is welcome. It is by the Radio Ankara Ensemble, so it is a song from Turkey. Enjoy.
Leyley, limi limi ley, koyu kahve gözleri, mini
So that was Train Gelir Haus Gelir by Radio Ankara. That was a song from Turkey about trains. Now we're going straight into a train song. This is Freight Train Blues by Brownie McGee from 1953. You know, but before we go, let's just recap. We did Shoe Turkey, right, by the Moving Star Hall Singers from John's Island. Shoe Turkey. Then Froggy Went A-Courting in the Company of 300 Turkeys. Now we're on the English translation, The Train Calls It Is Welcome from a Turkish folk song record. And we're on Freight Train Blues by Brownie McGee from the United States of America. And if you're wondering how this all gets back to food, this is, after all, an episode about food, a show about food. Just wait for it.
I hate to hear that freight train blow. I hate to hear that freight train blow. Every time it blows, I feel like riding too. I ask the brakeman to let me ride the blind. I ask that old brakeman to please let me ride the blind. He said, my good man, you know this train ain't mine. That was a mean old farmer and a cruel old engineer. That was a mean old farmer and a cruel old engineer. Was a mean old train that took my girl away from me. Got those freight train blues, I'm gonna need to cry. Got those freight train blues, I'm too darn mean to cry. I'm gonna love that woman till the day she dies. Shine in my back door someday.
And to bring it home tonight, the last song brings it all back to food. This is an insane song with an insane title. And the title is Your Blood Is Like a Railroad. And it's from an album called Do You Know What Happens Inside? or Do You Know What Goes On Inside, which was a collaboration between a folk singer and Isabella Abrams, who was a biologist. And it's all about kids, and it's kids' songs talking about digestion. And I just think Your Blood Is Like a Railroad could be the name, is the best name of any song that I've ever heard of any genre. So I encourage our listeners to create songs and call them Your Blood Is Like a Railroad. So this is Isabel Abrams taking us out.
As it goes through the long coiled tube called your digestive tract, your food is ground up into smaller and smaller pieces. When the pieces of food are small enough, they squeeze through the wall of the tube and go into your blood. Your blood is like a railroad train that travels on tracks to every part of your body.
Is like a railroad train.
I mean, that's fucked up.
It carries food up to your brain. Blood is pushed by your heart to help your body stop and start. Your blood is like a railroad train.
Your blood carries air and food to every part of you. It also takes away your body's waste, the things your body shouldn't keep.
Like a railroad train, it carries food up to your brain. From your lungs, blood carries air to your body everywhere. Your blood is like a railroad train. Blood is like a railroad train.
That's fucked up.
It carries food up to your brain. Your blood takes food you eat to your head and to your feet. Your blood is like a railroad train.
Your blood travels on tracks called blood vessels that go to every part of you. Your heart pumps blood into smaller and smaller tracks that go everywhere in your body. Food and oxygen are unloaded, and wastes are picked up by your blood in the very smallest tracks. That's how every part of you gets its food, and that's how your wastes are taken away. Your blood returns to your heart through larger and larger tracks. That's how blood travels all around you.
Blood is like a railroad train. It carries food up to your brain. Blood carries waste away. In your body, waste can't stay. Your blood is like a railroad train. Blood is like a railroad train. It carries food up to your brain. Just like traveling on a track round your body and right back. Your blood is like a railroad train. Blood is like a railroad train. It carries food up to your brain. Your blood is traveling through every single part of you. Your blood is like a railroad train.
There you have it. From turkeys to turkeys to turkey to trains to blood. And that is the story of our lives. And that is our episode tonight. Thank you for listening to the Joshua David Stein Variety Hour half hour. I'd like to thank our guests, Moira Hodgson from the longtime critic for the New York Observer, and Adam Platt, the critic from New York Magazine, and Liz Smith, our engineer. This is Joshua David Stein, and I will see you next week.
Joshua David Stein, Variety Hour. Joshua David Stein, Variety Hour. Half hour!
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.